Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
So just to make sure I understand, so to measure it, say like for volleyball, we took, say, the five skills, you know, passing, setting, hitting, attacking, serving, and we just had like a 5-point scale for each one, like something like that would work?
But I think what's important is that, you know, so for an outside hitter, you know, so I'm going to put you on the spot. So real quickly, for an outside hitter position offensively, give me five things that you as a coach would look for in an outside hitter. What are the things that you, when you go to a tournament and you think are important, what are the five most valuable skill sets that they need to have specific as possible?
Yeah.
Moxie.
A big big chin. Well, I think their platform, they've got to be good in serve receive. Okay. Have a good arm, meaning they can hit with pace and range. They jump well.
And then
I guess I'd want to evaluate their serve, the velocity and the movement on their float serves. Maybe what sort of teammate they were, something like that.
Okay. So do you notice when I asked you to be specific, how much more specific it got? It went way beyond footwork or passing and all these sort of general volleyball terms. It got very specific because that's true. Like when you go out to watch a game, you know exactly what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Your assistant coaches need to go and they need to look for exactly the same thing. Everything should be patterned off of what the head coach wants. And those assistant coaches need to understand that rating scale. So when you say velocity, arm speed and the velocity, you know, what the difference between a 5, a 4, a 3, a 2, and a 1? Like, how would I rank that? So, and again, I'm putting you on the spot. You asked the question, though, so I'm, you know, so what does a 5 look like? Just really quickly, give me a...
Oh, cut out for a second. Did we lose him? Oh, sorry. I said it again, Dan. It cut out.
I said, you know, give me what does a 5 look like? If he was going to get the high, let's say on a 5-point scale, 5 is the highest for arm speed, velocity. What would that? How would I notice that? Like, what? How would you define that? That I need to go out and look for a kid as your assistant coach that had a 5. What would a 5 look like?
Hmm. Well, that's a tough one. I guess it would look like it was really hard to dig them. You hit,
okay.
Defenders had a hard time controlling the ball when they hit it.
Okay, perfect. Now see, but that's something now I can go and watch and scout, and that gives me a clue for what it is that I need to watch for if I'm going to judge that. And so you could do the same thing, what a 4 looks like, a 3, a 2, a 1. Because what I want to do for you as your assistant, and every assistant wants to do this for a head coach, I want to go out to a tournament, scout the guys or the women that you want me scouting, and I want to come back and say, Coach, she was a 44, she was a 42, she was a 40. I want to give you accurate reports because if I'm measuring it based on the way that you just outlined it, you don't have to go back and watch them, really. If you think about it, if you have described it in enough detail, I should be able to go out and be your eyes, and now you can act more quickly on the recruiting side of it. And so as coaches have implemented this, just different parts of the country, different types of programs, the thing that they find is we are so much faster at recruiting than our competition now because we only have to go out and watch them once, maybe twice if we want another set of eyes on them. And when we go to a tournament, I'm not there leaning back in the bleachers watching the whole game. I'm watching for these 5 or 6 or 10, however many, you know, they have outlined, specific skill sets. And I'm watching those. I come up with my score, and then I move on to the next skill set. And then I watch those. And I come back with a score that the coach can trust. And that's what – that makes it easier. Really the onus is on the coach to describe it. And it's funny, some coaches, and I'm thinking of a D1 volleyball coach that we work with, and her comment was, my assistants know what I look for, let's say, in an outside hitter. Well, we don't need to go over this. They know. okay, well, just humor me, coach. You know, let's go through this and describe what you want. Let's just say in an outside hitter. And as she was, and this happens all the time, as she was describing the outside hitter qualities, guess what all of her assistants were doing? They were writing it down. They were writing notes because, you know what? They had never heard it before. They had never heard her define it. It was always something vague. And what we want is specific. So we want it as specific as possible so that you as a staff know, okay, she's good, or he's the one based on these skill sets. And then once you have a number, what coaches always do is they say, well, this is great. Let's measure how this class versus the last class. And so we'll measure the last class we brought in. Did we go up or down? Let's measure it versus the team, the starters on the court right now. And once you get a number associated with it, there are so many things from a measurement standpoint that you can do with it. And I wouldn't say that very many coaches do it this way because it's hard. I mean, it's just a more complicated, but it's well thought out in the process. So that's the way we would love for coaches to do it because it's more accurate.
I'm glad I followed up because, I think that was really helpful. And gosh, that's just so much better than opinion and just straight guesses.
Yeah.
Dan, you know, you've talked about things that great recruiters are able to identify. And a lot of are the strengths of certain players. What sort of red flags do really amazing recruiters identify early on in the process, or really at any point in it?
I would think, well, so I'm going to maybe go with a red flag or two that maybe you wouldn't think of as a red flag. And that is, if somebody isn't going to be interested in a program, one of the main factors is, I think, where the school is located, the distance. So let's just say you're a West Coast school and you're recruiting a kid from Texas to come out and play volleyball for you. And you saw him at a tournament, great player, and he responds to your email, your letter, or whatever method you are using to recruit him. I would say here's the red flag I would want to look for. Why are you interested in coming to play for me in California? That's 1,500, 2,000 miles away. So I would add, if I was the coach and I was recruiting somebody out of state, the first question I would ask, or one of the first, would be, hey, tell me why, as a kid from Texas, you think or you sort of feel like that you coming out to California to play is the right thing. Is it a smart, decision? Like, why does it seem like it's the right thing to do? And if you get a kid that says, coach, I mean, I don't know, I'm sort of looking around and exploring my options and just sort of seeing what's out there, and okay, I don't think you stop recruiting that kid, but you are not, he's not interested in your program. He's curious, and that's about it. If, on the other hand, you have an athlete and a prospect that says, oh, coach, I don't know if I told you, my grandparents both live in that area, love, we go there every summer, I love the weather, I want to study this and this. I know your school has it. Okay, completely different reason now to recruit an out-of-state player. So one of the red flags I would talk about first is when it comes to location, or just like, why are they interested in your school? If they can't define it early, it just signals to you that you have a lot of work to do. So just from the standpoint that they have responded to an email, or they returned a phone call, or they answered your text, does not mean you are recruiting that athlete. Or actually, you're recruiting them, but they're not interested in you. They're being polite and they're answering your email, but that's not, it's too much of a stretch to say that they are interested. So really define the interest level. I would say that the other thing that that would be a red flag for a coach, for me looking at a coaching staff, would be if, and I'll go back to something we've talked about already, if they aren't recruiting actively and have a good relationship with the parents of the recruit before they come onto campus, that would be a red flag. I don't know how well that program is going to perform on a long-term basis because the parents are talking in the background. And as a coach, I have to know, and I want to know, what are they saying? And I want to be involved in that conversation. So that would be a red flag. I guess the other one that I would go through and talk about is, let's say you go through the recruiting process, they come onto campus, you get ready to ask them, and hey, you want to verbally commit, we want you here. Yeah, coach, you know, I'll do that. I'll come play for you. Great. I mean, and that happens all the time. And then what happens is that a couple of weeks later or 2 months later, that kid decommits and opens it back up, or you find that they took another two visits and you know, are looking at committing somewhere else. So when you get a verbal commitment, I would think that's a great first step. Until they sign their letter of intent, I don't put much stock in it, but it's nice to know that they're leaning your direction. I think if you wanted to confirm it and sort of take down the red flag, my response would be, that is so fantastic. Sarah, great news. I'm really excited. So here's what it'll do. It becomes official with us. I can take it to my AD and he'll sign off on the roster spot or whatever process you want to invent internally. But we'll sign up for that roster spot, sign off on it once you announce it on social media. So just, if you can announce it on Instagram, announce it on Twitter, whatever her thing is, after that, then I'll print that out and take it, and our AD will sign off on it. And if the athlete says, no problem, coach, I'll do that when I get home tonight, probably 7 or 7:30, and I'll text you once I do it. Okay, you've got a commitment. If the reaction is, coach, I don't know if I want to do that. Do I really have to do that? Why wouldn't they want to do that?
They're not committed.
Right. They're not sure. Every other coach is going to see it, and they'll stop recruiting him. So have you really got a verbal commitment? And so, you know, it's not so much that there are red flags that coaches miss. I think that there are internal red flags or hidden red flags that a coach needs to search out, because they're pretty consistent and they happen, you know, pretty regularly. And what I don't like is when an athlete or a family plays a coach and, you know, puts you in their back pocket.
Cool. And Dan, I imagine that talking on the phone is happening less and less, especially for high school kids. What tips do you have for phone calls with a recruit?
I would say that early on, and again, I'll put myself in the position, if I was a volleyball coach and I was recruiting, we just went through as we're, you know, recording this, first contacts for a new class just happened on September 1st. I would text message as much as possible with those athletes, just because that's where they're at. That's how they communicate. And I remember when we first got started in all of this back in 2005, you know, email, believe it or not, if you remember, was still sort of a newer thing. And I had a lot of coaches that said, you know, I don't like email. I want to just, you know, talk on the phone or write them a letter. I'm not into this email thing. Well, of course, now every coach does email. I remember there was when Twitter first came out and we started recommending to coaches that they use Twitter. That same day that article came out, I had four or five coaches violently opposed to Twitter, any idea of this new thing called social media. I will never be on that. Can't believe you recommended coaches should do that. And of course, now all those coaches are on social media and on Twitter. And I guess my point is this. We as coaches have to go to where the athlete is. I'm 51 years old. Any coach that is texting with me after about the second or third exchange, I'm probably just going to call you, because I'd rather talk to you on the phone and just, you know, not have to text back and forth. My 19 and 23-year-old daughters would much rather text, to my wife's dismay and you know, it really depresses her, but they would rather text than talk. They'll text with you all day long, and most prospects will. I had a coach a couple of months ago say, you know, these kids, I can call them on the phone and it's just 5 minutes of torture to get them to talk on the phone. If I text him, we could be talking on the phone back and forth or texting back and forth for the next hour and a half. Why can't they just talk to me like they text me? And my response to that coach was, why can't you just text them like you talk to them? So can we meet them where they're at? Especially early on, I think the phone calls take place and are really have some good traction and staying power after they visit campus. Because now they've seen you, they've gotten to know you, there's a face with the voice, with the name. And now if you call after that, it's just much easier to get them to talk. So it's not that phone calls don't have a place, but at the start, these kids are terrified of saying the wrong things or embarrassing themselves. That's why how I explain this to coaches is that if you're texting a kid and you type something and you can see the little three circles, fading in and out, like they're typing something in response and then it stops. And then about a minute later, it'll start up again. And then their message comes through. Well, they reread it and decided to change something, and then they sent it. So what text messaging allows them to do is not look stupid in front of you, because you are intimidating to them as a coach. You are really intimidating. And, just take volleyball. How much time, effort, money, energy has that family and that kid put into their sport? And now finally they have gotten the attention of you, a volleyball coach, and I don't want to blow it. So don't put me in the position of having to talk to you on the phone and not feeling comfortable of messing up, because it is going to be a weird, awkward, unproductive call. If you want to text me, that's good, because now it's on my terms and I can decide what I want to say and make sure it's right and then send it. So just use that as a starting block and work into phone calls.
So then for a lot of volleyball recruits for both beach and indoor, unfortunately, they're committing very early in the process, even freshman, sophomore year, for a verbal commit. Mm-hmm. If you don't have, say, a great relationship with a club coach or their recruiting coordinator yet, mm-hmm. how do you get in the game? How do you get involved in that sort of scenario?
Well, the first thing I'll say is, and I'll come back and answer that question, but you said something that they're making these commitments as freshmen and sophomores, unfortunately. What I want coaches to understand, and again, rightly or wrongly, that in their mind, if they can find a place where they're going to have a college education paid for, especially if it's at a good school, BCS school, certainly like, you throw a name like Stanford out. If I could know my freshman year, sophomore year, that coach at that school gave me the opportunity to go to that school after college, so many families, so many parents, so many players say that is such a relief, and I want to do that, because now I can just play high school volleyball. Now I can just play my club, and I don't have to go through the whole recruiting BS that all my friends are going to have to do. It's done, it's secured, and I like that. So one thing I tell coaches, and we've spoken at coaches' conventions about this, because the trend, I think, for a lot of coaches is we want to stop early recruiting, and now the NCAA has said no contact before their junior year. For the parents, I've heard from a lot of parents and kids that they don't understand why coaches are doing that, because it limits their ability, number one, to get to know a program, but number two, if that coach wants me and we want that school, I want to go to that school, and it's a lot of pressure off of me now. So I, again, as adults in the industry, we can look at it and say, that's not really the right way to choose a college. You should take your time, visit a lot of schools, make sure academically it's a good fit, and so on and so forth. From the parents' mindset, from the mindset of an athlete going through this process, what I want coaches to understand is, the whole goal of why they've been playing club volleyball all these years is so that they can get a college scholarship. It's not for fitness or more friends or, fun places to go visit, every weekend of their life. It's they're working towards this college scholarship or college opportunity. And so they want, of course they want it early. Now, so I'll get down off my pedestal there and answer the question, which is this, that, how do you make the relationship something worth talking about if you don't have a good relationship with the club coach or that club director? Honestly, I think it's very hard. In your sport, specifically in volleyball, I think it's incredibly hard to do that, which is why, in addition to saying to coaches you need to separately recruit the parents of your prospects, I think you need to separately and uniquely recruit the coaches in those clubs, not because you have the time to do it or because it makes it easier. It actually makes it harder But if you're a program that's building and you want to beat a program that in your region is sort of the bully that just gets everybody that they seem to want, the difference is they probably have a really good relationship with that club coach who is funneling them information and players and saying good things about the program. So I think there needs to be efforts to recruit that club. Mm-hmm. And really my goal for a coach, if we're working with them, the standard I want to meet is, and let's just take Stanford because they're, we talk about a great school, a great program. My goal my goal, if I was at a non-BCS school in the West, my goal would be in the mind of that recruit, I don't want to beat Stanford. I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to try to worry about equalizing myself to say that the outcome that you're going to get here is going to be the same at Stanford. So you want your business degree. Here's how we're going to do that here. So we're going to give you the same thing Stanford's going to give you. I'm not going to try to beat that school. I just want to equalize it and take it out of the discussion as a decision point. In the same way, with a coach, club coach, if I'm the program that hasn't been recommended before, I do the work, and if I can just get the perception of my program up to even with him, to neutral with that club director, if I can just get to neutral, I think that's a win. I don't need him recommending necessarily. I just need him not saying, "Oh, don't go there. You're better than that. You should go over here to these other two." I want him to say, "You know what? Coach Starr runs a good program. I'm really impressed. Yeah, you should take a look at him." If that's all we get, I think that's a win. But you as the coaches have to put the work in to develop those relationships, because you happen to coach and recruit in a sport where they largely run the conversation and where the parents are looking to them for advice and direction. Mm-hmm. Fairly or unfairly, that's probably what you're going to have to do to really begin to build a pipeline from one club into your program.
Right.
Dan, this is also awesome. And one of the things that you've been talking about is having a really specific and clear message about what your program is about, what you're about as a coach, what your school is about. And you mentioned on your website the restaurant analogy, that you're probably not going to be super excited about a restaurant that claims to offer amazing Cuban and Mexican and Japanese and Italian food.
Right. That's a real restaurant, by the way. In California. If you're referring to the article, that is a real restaurant, and I won't name the town or name the place. That is a real place.
Must be up in Northern California.
No, it sounds amazing. It sounds like it's on the west side of
California. No.
What kind of tips do you have for us as coaches as we try to define what our programs are about in really specific and simple terms?
Yeah, that's a great question. So here, let me. The simple way to answer that is start with what you aren't, because every coach everywhere, honestly, guys, every coach everywhere pretty much defines their program as the same thing as everybody else. We've got a great school, great degrees, campus. We're an up-and-coming program. We're a family. Every coach everywhere says we're a family. And so I don't want you to say the same things. Most of your programs, you can't afford to do that. So I want you to talk about the things that you aren't. Who isn't right for your program? What if you in your first communication to create curiosity in a conversation say, look, I'm paraphrasing, but here is who isn't right for us. Here's who's not going to be successful or enjoy their experience at our school. And outline that. Here's how we're different than most campuses. The reason I go this direction is that at the core is what most kids and parents are looking for. They're trying to figure out who's the right choice for me. Well, if everybody says the same thing of here's what we have, degrees, beautiful campus, family feel, you know, good volleyball, look at our facility, you know, West Coast weather, whatever it is, if everyone's saying the same thing, I now go into the recruiting process as the athlete with a 5- or 6-way tie for first place. And I don't know, how am I supposed to make that decision? And so then you get, and how many times you get this random, you know, emotional, weird ways of making a decision. Well, you know, I went there because they were the same colors as my high school and I love my high school. Or they were, I'm trying to think of all the crazy reasons. They were ranked three spots higher in their business degree than that other school that was recruiting me. I need you as coaches to explain to them, here's why we're wrong for some people and why, but here's why we're right and how we're different than other places. So as you define yourself, don't be afraid to talk about what you aren't and what you aren't good at or what the type of kid that isn't right for your program. Because whenever you do that, which goes against most schools' philosophy is we're right for everybody. There's a little bit of something here for everybody. Come one, come all, apply. Please be interested in us. That's the way most admissions departments go out and recruit. We've got something for everybody. For you as a coach, if you say, look, here's what we're all about. Here's my philosophy. Here's the type of players that aren't going to be successful for us. What you do is you eliminate 50% of your kids, your prospects that would listen to that and say, I don't want that. That's completely wrong. I don't want to play for him. But the other 50% gravitate towards you and say, yes, that's exactly what I'm looking for. And that's so different from what other schools are saying. And they gravitate towards you. So I think it's good to define who you are and what you aren't and who's right for you and who's wrong for you, because you'll get much more passionate interest from the kids that that you really want. That's the thing, is that it actually will match up with what you want as a coach in terms of an incoming class of athlete.
Well, we learned a lot here and taken a lot of your time. I think we could keep picking your brain for another hour. I know you've had a long day.
I could go another 6, Dan. I'm keeping you all night, man.
Bring me to campus and we'll do 8. How about that?
I think it's going to have to be a must-have, because we have all these like specific to our situation that we would love to get into the weeds with. But this has been really, really helpful.
And that can be our follow-up episode.
That sounds great.
Some good individual, like, you know, just, you know, scenarios to go through.
It's a done deal. If you're up for it, it's a done deal. We already got a lot of homework here from all that you've given us. So
I know. I started a little list. I'm not going to show it to John, though.
I'm still going to beat him. So, no. But thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And all that you do on the blog and the podcast and all the great information. I think, like you said, no one had ever taught me how to recruit. I have no idea what I was doing until I found your information, your resources. I still have a long way to go, but until I did, I felt really lost, and it's awesome. It's helped so much. So,
wow, thank you. I appreciate that. And that's, you know, just last thing I'll say is that that's what makes this job great, is, and why I'm willing to stay up until, you know, whatever it is, 9, 10 o'clock on the East Coast, is because, you know, being able to help a coach figure out their job and figure out what they should do, and then to see the difference that it makes, is really gratifying. And so it's fun to be able to help coaches, and you know, that's, I think there's that passion. Everybody that works within our organization really likes, obviously, winning athletes, but also just providing some training, because you're right. You're asked to sell. I mean, all of you that are listening to this, and certainly the two of you, are professional salespeople. Really, 80% of your job is sales, and you get to coach a little bit, 20% here and there during the year. But when you can become a great recruiter and a good communicator and a good marketer, oh man, it gets so much fun and so much easier, because now you have great players, and it's amazing how good of a coach you become when you have great players.
That's for sure.
That's what we like getting helping coaches to do.
That's awesome. Well, thanks again, Dan. I hope we get to talk to you again soon.
Me too. Let's set it up. I'd love to do it again.
Thanks, Dan.
Sounds good.
Dan, we can find you on dantutor.com.
Yes.
Anywhere else we that our listeners should listen for or look for you?
On Twitter, at Dan Tudor. We post a lot of just recruiting news articles, you know, interesting psychological studies, just anything that would make you a smarter coach. We don't do a lot of fluff. It's really more geared towards, you know, if you follow us on Twitter, you're going to get some really just good information, even outside the sports world. And then, you know, the podcast that we do, the College Recruiting Weekly podcast, is really geared towards just making – it's an extended conversation. We'll bring coaches on to explain how they did it and why, you know, the methods that they use, and we'll talk to experts. And, you know, so a lot of coaches have said that's been really helpful. And so those are the things. And then, you know, obviously if there's more extended, more in-depth personal help, we work with 260 different programs around the country in different sports, on a one-on-one basis, which then you get really detailed because you can dive in and uncover exactly what's going on with that individual program. So those are all the ways. Or a lot, and listen, at the website, there's a lot of free stuff. You don't have to pay us anything. There's 15 years worth of articles and research and everything else that we give coaches access to.
Awesome.
Love it. Well, thanks, Dan. Have a good night.
Yeah, you guys too. I look forward to it.
Thanks, Dan. Take care.
All right. Thanks
man.
Okay.